Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE Report Weekend Show. Corey Fleck here, your host for the first half of this show. In the back half, Chad will be back with us as we're going to focus back half of the show more on investing, specifically in resource stocks, mostly the metals stocks. First half of the show, we're going to be talking markets, even though the markets have been a bit boring. Just as a reminder, please go back through our website, kereport.com, or through your podcast player, the KE Report. That's all you have to search, as well as our YouTube page to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates. We really appreciate hearing all of your feedback from our interviews, especially the company ones, because there's just a lot more action that's going on with a lot of the companies we follow this year. To kick off the show, I'm chatting with Dana Lyons. Dana is fund manager and editor of the Lyons Share Pro website. Dana, as we always do, we'll look across the spectrum within the markets to see what's outperforming and what's underperforming. Right now, as I said, these markets have been a little boring. They haven't been dropping very much. They also haven't been popping very much. That being said, the S&P did just hit another all-time high this week, but really kind of a marginal high. And then we saw weakness on the back of that high being hit the very next day. One thing we can say for certain is that this market is not at all being led by the Mag 7 right now. Maybe that's the problem with the markets being boring. But Dana, what's your takeaway from really how the markets right now are more or less just treading water sideways?
Yeah, that's a good point, Corey. I've been seeing kind of a bifurcated market really for most of this year after markets pretty much peaked in December, had a sell-off. And then we saw a better recovery in the large cap growth stocks, which have continued to pretty much be the relative strength leaders in the market. Most of the large cap averages have been back up, testing or approaching and consolidating near all-time highs over the last month or so. Even as, you know, the broader market, beginning with that breath sell-off in early December, which really gave our models a heads up about potential deterioration in the broad market coming. And since then, we've seen really the broad market and the breadth continue to tail off. We did see the bounce back into January into lower highs. The broad market, small caps, mid caps, equal weight stuff really formed lower highs, even as the large caps, like I said, went up and at least tested all-time highs. So you continue to see, from a relative perspective, the large cap growth continued to lead the broader market, but I've been not making much progress at all, like you mentioned, you know, more going sideways and being resilient, but not selling off. But as far as our models are concerned, as far as our allocation is concerned, we feel much more comfortable and have much more ammunition to get more aggressive if we did see the broader market begin to bounce back more. If we saw breath begin to bounce back more and the internals start to recover more strongly and really get the support of the broad market turned back higher, that would give us a little bit more, like I said, fodder to get more aggressive. And I think that point will come after we get through a little bit of a dicey short-term environment right now.
Man, there's a lot of noise out there, especially on the political front, that I'm sure is holding these markets back a little bit and making investors kind of figure out what the lay of the land is. But let's get your outlook for the rest of this year. Usually we talk more short-term trading strategies, but when you and I were chatting off mic, you were talking about your models and your longer-term, more or less, thesis for this year. Now, these things don't always pan out the way that everyone outlines them. But look, there is still, I think, a balanced contingent out there saying these markets are due for a major correction. And then another contingent saying, look, everything seems to be going pretty well in the U.S. These markets could keep on moving higher. What's your outlook throughout the rest of this year?
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, being in the markets for many decades, you do get a sense for the overall, you know, the conditions in the overall market and what types of moves or scenarios are most likely. The good thing is, from our perspective, is having an objective quantitative models that really direct our decision making at the end of the day. So even if our overall thesis is wrong, as long as our models are correct and keep us positioned correctly, then, you know, I don't mind being wrong with this thesis because I got that backup in my pocket. But as you mentioned, looking at different durations, we do have a setup for potential. If you go near term, potential some weakness here, especially throughout the last half of February, typically weaker seasonality. We do see the potential for following that a perhaps another run, another strong run, maybe a blow-off type move to the upside. And that sucks investors back in, really gets sentiment extremely bullish again before the ultimate rug is pulled out from underneath them. Because like you mentioned, and we've talked about in past shows, from a longer-term perspective, looking at what we call those long-term backdrop or background indicators, things like percentage of assets invested in stocks, you look at stock valuations, you look at stock market cap versus the economy. Everything is at historic highs, you know, historically excessive levels. So we are building up to potential major top and beginning of a very long and very difficult period for investors. But like you mentioned, it's all a matter of timing. Those long-term indicators are not good timing indicators. They just give you a degree of risk in the market for when that, you know, when the rug does get pulled out from under. And like I said, the risk is basically at an all-time high from a longer-term perspective. But as I mentioned, as long as the data, as long as the momentum and the breadth continues to move higher, as long as it does, we could have significant gains, significant profit opportunities to the upside before, you know, the ultimate top does occur. So that's our, as you said, thesis generally looking out for this year. But we do think this year, 2025, has the opportunity, the possibility of being like a major type of a juncture year in the markets.
So what could be the leading sectors then this year? Do your models give you any insights on what could carry these markets?
When we're looking at investment selection or specific sectors, we do have relative strength models that basically measure. The most important factor is really risk-adjusted return and the amount of return and consistency in return versus typically the risk inherent or volatility inherent in those sectors. And right now, we're continuing to see that large cap growth area of the market lead the way. And we'll continue to, you know, even if we do see some short-term choppiness here, we're happy to dip our toes into those types of areas as they pull back to good entry points. But we will continue to follow our quantitative models as far as relative strength and those areas that are best set up for near-term to intermediate-term upside. And that's basically what's leading right now. And various areas in the technology sector, various financial subsectors leading the way. And then you have some offshoots like, you know, aerospace and defense has been really good. Some of the foreign markets are re-emerging here, especially on a currency hedge basis. So we are looking at those on a pullback, you know, hedged in foreign currencies, as we're seeing some of those foreign markets break out, especially over in Europe, which, you know, from a subjective notion, you kind of scratch your head and be, why is Europe breaking out? But from a profit perspective, we don't really care about the why as long as it is. But again, it's best played on a currency hedge perspective. And that's what we continue to do there.
Dan, how about interest rate sensitive sectors? Rates are remaining generally elevated, 10-year right around that 4.5% level. Fact of the matter is, we don't have the outlook of getting any rate cuts anytime soon, this year at least. So the expectations are rates are going to remain at generally elevated. Are interest rate sensitive sectors then being hit?
Yeah, from a short-term perspective, it doesn't look like rate cuts are on the horizon, at least not to the point, not to the extent that they were, you know, if you looked 4 or 5 months ago. However, it doesn't really speak to the prospects for longer term rates. That'll be guided by, you know, other factors beyond the Fed's control. So right now we're seeing interest rates kind of move sideways, similar to what we're seeing in the equity market. We're not seeing them flying higher. Basically, it's a coin flip right now as far as the 10-year and the 30-year. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Inflationary forces look to be building back up again, which could be damaging, obviously, to bond markets. At the same time, if we see the Doge factor continuing to shore up potential finances in the U.S. government, that could have a positive effect on fixed income. So there are a lot of factors, a lot of market forces that will affect those longer term rates that beyond just the control or just purview of the Federal Reserve. So that's always interesting. As you know, I think in the long term, we did form a long term low in interest rates in 2020. And by and large, they should be rising for the next decade or even further. But in the interim, it's not going to be straight up. So you could have big swings. I could envision, you know, one more big pullback in bond yields before that next major low. But we'll continue to monitor that closely. And again, it's important to read the market data, not just listen to the Fed when we're considering longer term interest rates.
Yeah, very true. Very good point. But hey, a lot of people do still always hang on what the Fed has to say, but they have outlined a more cautious approach throughout this year. What about dividend sectors then? Dana, are you seeing any opportunities in some of these sectors that can pay investors back, keep up with these generally higher rates?
Yeah, in fact, we've been involved in a couple dividend plays over the course of really the last year or so, both ends of the spectrum, both smaller cap as well as some larger cap names. Small to mid-cap ETF, ticker symbol is SDVY, did top out in December along with, you know, the rest of the broad market, but has hung in there pretty well. I do like the looks of that. It's basically pulling back just from all-time highs from December, unlike some of the other broad markets that couldn't surpass those 2022 highs. So this one was able to hit new highs and consolidating right now. I like the prospects for that. Another name, dividend name, would be a technology dividend ETF, TDIV would be the ticker symbol, which is trading right at all-time highs right now, which we continue to like. It's consolidated for the last 6 months or so, and I think building up for the potential for another breakout, another what could be substantial up leg there. So there, we do like the prospects for some of these dividend plays, so that would be just two of them.
All right, Dana, I also want to talk global markets then. You said how Europe is doing well, and the one thing I keep on hearing is just how dominant the U.S. markets have been, how they account for pretty much the value of all the global markets combined. Also just relates to how well these companies in the U.S. have done, which are also global companies. So is there an opportunity here for global markets to play catch-up, especially as you said, it's also a currency play, so maybe a weakening dollar tied in with that?
Yeah, for sure. We've seen, obviously, dominance by the U.S. for a long time. At some point, you know, some of the rest of the world should play catch-up. Europe, for example, hasn't gone really anywhere for decades. And if you look fundamentally, there's not really a case to be made for Europe going anywhere, especially relative to the U.S. But maybe it's kind of that submerged balloon type theory. It's been held down for so long. Maybe it's just due, but we'll play it, you know, quantitatively and objectively and let prices dictate our moves. But right now we've seen some breakouts in several of the European countries, as well as, you know, some of the broad European indices themselves, which have broken out to all-time highs. And again, that's priced in, for example, the euro. So from our perspective, we want to continue to play those foreign markets in currency hedge terms. In Europe, it'd be DBEZ would be one particular ETF that is currency that is hedged against the euro. You have a couple other broader type international plays in the EFA that are also hedged, currency hedged, that are also breaking out to all-time highs, which would be great buys on pullbacks towards those breakout areas. So yes, you're seeing some moves in some global areas that have been relatively dormant for a long time that are now finally making the moves. But again, it makes all the difference in the world in what currency you're, you're valuing or tizing those gains in. So I would continue to play that in currency hedge, hedging against, those foreign currencies, as opposed to, in U.S. dollar terms, which most of the U.S. international equity ETFs are priced in dollars. So you look at those charts and certainly most of them are well below all-time highs.
Yeah, that's the thing. Maybe a catch-up trade globally too. Let's also touch on the gold sector. More just on the gold stocks though. I want to get your thoughts on something like GDX, the gold miners ETF. You know how much we like to quickly cover that within our interviews. And look, that sector has been a complete outperformer this year, up over 20%. Took a little breather this week, I guess, but still strong to end the week. So Dana, what's your outlook? How much higher could something like GDX go?
Yeah, and we've talked about in past shows, it certainly has been an outperformer this year, but you look at what happened in the fourth quarter when the miner stocks really got decimated. So we're not even back to those former highs. If you talk about GDX, GDXJ, especially the silver miners and the copper miners, which are even more egregious underperformers relative to those highs from last fall. So we do have positions in all of them. We have been trimming over the last week or so into these rallies to lower highs. I'd rather see, less resistance above, meaning a clearer path, meaning, not recent higher highs to contend with. If I'm going to be a little bit more aggressive in those areas. So, for example, you look at the price of gold itself, rather be more aggressive, even though it's run so much. At all-time highs, I'd rather be more aggressive in something that doesn't have a series of higher highs to kind of break through. It's more clear sailing. Again, not that I'm advocating going out and chasing the price of gold at these levels, but I'd like to see a little bit more evidence as far as GDX is concerned, breaking through those highs that we've seen. Really going back to the beginning of last decade, GDX was particularly around that 45, 46 level. We can get a breakout above there. Then that opens up a little bit more, upside as far as technically, just speaking technically and supply and demand wide. So it's been a nice run, like you said, year to date, but running into some resistance here and lower highs. So we've been trimming into this move. Not that we wouldn't add back, but again, we'd like to see a little bit more constructive progress technically before we get more aggressive there again.
So, Dana, you mentioned copper and silver miners kind of lagging the move that we've seen in the gold stocks. Is there a catch-up trade there? Does gold stocks need to keep on outperforming to pull those higher?
It remains to be seen. I mean, I'm just looking technically. The moves have tracked each other. It's not like, silver miners and copper miners haven't bounced since the beginning of the year. They bounced along with gold miners. They just haven't bounced as much, and they're well off of the prior peak. So I would say the momentum there in those sectors than in the gold miners. So I'd really tend to avoid those sectors more so than even the gold miners. It'd be one thing if those miners hadn't made their moves yet. But they have indeed been bouncing. It's been more of a dead cat bounce more than anything in those sectors. So for me, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence right now. Because there is plenty of resistance or plenty of levels that they still need to work through. So I would, continue to prioritize those markets from gold number one, silver number two, and copper number three, or maybe copper, silver, neck and neck here, but still gold is the clear leader as far as the precious metals are concerned.
Okay. Dana, before I get you out of here, you are running an anniversary sale. Just explain to our audience what subscribers of yours get when they sign up for the Lion Share Pro, and also what this anniversary sale is all about.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks, Corey. So with the lion's share, basically, I know your listeners, a lot of your listeners are traders. With the lion's share, we basically tell you every day what we're doing, what we're looking at, what the moves we're actually making in our managed accounts, in our managed clients. And then the traders, subscribers have to pull the lever themselves. But I know a lot of your listeners are capable traders and like to do it themselves, kind of DIY, but maybe like to get a little bit more guidance as far as what levers to pull. So we're very candid about telling our lion's share subscribers what we're looking at again. And if we do make any moves, we let them know, in a timely fashion, what we're buying, what we're selling, what we're shorting, et cetera, across the gamut in all asset classes. And we are running this week. It's our 8th anniversary. We launched 8 years ago. And when we launched, we had a 33% off deal to launch the product. And we're running that again as we do every year. So this will be our biggest sale of the year, except for potentially Black Friday if we run it. But again, like as we discussed, I think 2025 is going to be a monumental year in the market. So if anyone is interested, this would be a great year to try the product. And of course, this week with the sale, probably a good time to jump in if you are interested. So appreciate that. And always great talking to you, Corey. And you got a great audience out there and appreciate all the feedback I get from them.
All right, Dana, thank you for always taking time with us and sharing your outlooks for these markets. I find your insights very valuable, especially for traders out there looking to find those sectors that are performing well that you can make some money in simply trading. Again, Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the Lion Share Pro. Please click that link and try out Dana's service. Dana, thanks for your time. Really appreciate your outlook this weekend.
You got it. Always a pleasure, Corey. Thank you.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.